This is Ryan Hooper, and you're listening to Section 113 with Travis Demers and Michael Holton.
Welcome into another edition of the Section 113 podcast, coming to you from mostly sunny Miami, Florida, along with Michael Holton. I'm Travis Demers. Michael, this is the most sunshine we've seen in a while, and it is a beautiful thing. It's pretty humid, but it's hot. It's nice.
It's very nice. I got out and took a little walk when we got here yesterday, and as we tape this podcast, I look out the window at high rises and sunshine and beautiful Miami.
Miami's one of those cities where you look out the window of your hotel room and you know instantly you're in Miami.
Yeah, because you see high rises and swimming pools on roofs everywhere.
Well, you don't see that in Portland?
No, maybe I don't get high enough, but no, you don't see swimming pools everywhere in Portland.
So we're here with game three of a seven-game road trip tonight, depending on when you're listening. The road trip opened up with a loss in Houston and a loss in Atlanta. And the team has gone very young, mainly because of all of the injuries, but three straight games starting five rookies after it only happened once in NBA history since the merger. Not going to be the case tonight, though, at least, you know, without Tumani Kamara, because he's injured. He won't play tonight. But one of the things we've seen the last couple of games, Michael, is that they get off to a really good start. The first half is really good. And then, you know, in Houston, it took about until midway through the fourth quarter before they finally ran out of gas and the Rockets took over. It was halftime against Atlanta when things changed a little bit. But the energy is there to start. The execution is there to start the games. They just haven't quite been able to put it together for a full 48 minutes. And sometimes, you know, full 36 minutes if you're looking at that game against Atlanta.
Well, NBA games are long. I mean, and we're looking at the fast and furious. I mean, these young guys are getting out of the gate quickly, executing a game plan discipline. And you can just tell there's a commitment to playing faster, you know, getting up and down the floor. And it really enhances the playmaking for young guys. They don't have to deal with the physicality of NBA defenses, you know, when they can play at the desired pace. And if you look back over the couple of games on this trip, when the game kind of hit that snag is when it became a half-court game and a possession grinder type of game. So I think tonight what we can see here in Miami and the rest of this trip is a commitment to rebounding and running.
Okay, so with that, Miami's a good rebounding team. They don't give up a lot of second-chance points. Obviously, Bam Adebayo in the middle is very good. They've got a lot of injuries, guys who aren't playing, but that's not their main core of guys except for maybe Tyler Hero. So, I mean, you're going to see the Miami Heat tonight, unlike what we've seen in some of the more recent games. So when you talk about pushing that pace, you know you're going to turn the ball over. And it's happened a lot the last couple of games with that pace comes turnovers. Is that just something that at this point, because you're trying to play with pace, you got to live with it?
Yeah, it's a part of the process. You get young guys playing fast and making decisions at high speeds with combinations of guys that haven't played a lot of minutes together. You know, turnovers are a byproduct of that. And, you know, I'm sure the team is working hard and looking at tape and cleaning that up, and they will get better playing fast with better ball security. You know, against a team like Miami, you know, I don't know that turnovers are going to be the biggest issue because Miami's not a big points off turnover team. They don't really want to quickly convert your miscues, you know, so there's not as much risk there. I think what's problematic, Travis, against Miami playing fast is you got to be able to set your defense quickly because they screen very well, particularly on the perimeter for three-point shots.
Yeah, Miami, you've mentioned it a couple of times, very physical team. They're not a, you know, a fast-paced team at all. I think they're the second slowest team in the league in terms of pace. But that's just who they are. It's what they've always been. And when you're trying to play with pace and they're not, somebody is going to be playing the way they don't want to play. So how do you make sure that's not you?
Well, you got to be prepared to guard Miami in the half court because they're not going to shoot quick. And that's one of the byproducts young guys don't prepare for is you think we're going to play fast, and inside every basketball player, we're going to activate that desire to respond by playing fast because that's kind of the ebb and flow in the DNA of the game. And you see it in summer league. You see it in pickup games. You know, you score on me, I score on you. All of a sudden, we're going up and down. Miami's not buying into that. They're not going up and down like that. So when the Blazers have to play defense for 20 seconds, or they got to play defense in the post, or you got to guard Bam out of the bye, you know, and you got to deal with the physicality of blocking out. It sinks in that, okay, this is a blue collar, hard hat, overall lunch pail type of game.
That's just kind of what it always is with Miami. And, you know, we're focusing on Miami right now because we're here. We're focusing on that game, and that game's tonight. There are a couple of more games before we record another podcast. You got Orlando on Monday night, and then Charlotte. Orlando is a young team that is, they are really trying to push themselves up the standings and show they belong with some of those top teams. Charlotte's in a very similar position with the Blazers. So you've got some very different style games on this trip. Availability is obviously something that really dictates a lot of things. But at this point of the season, 7, 8, 9 games left. With the players that are available, and we saw it last year, you know, how do you put all this together? And I know wins and losses aren't right now the end-all, be-all, development is, and get the most out of what you have in this final stretch.
Well, it's about performance. You evaluate performances. And I'm sure the staff is locked into making sure every player individually and the team as a whole understands the goals going into the game from a performance standpoint. Okay, we want to play faster, get our pace up, rebound better. We want to hit certain numbers and metrics, if that's a word, in terms of second chance points and points off turnovers. I mean, there are measurables that you can give young teams and evaluate their performance within that. And that's what you do. You break the game down into some slices of what you're measuring in terms of performance.
Scoot is the biggest focus for most people right now because he is the number 3 draft pick, because he is the guy that everybody's putting their attention on. And there are some times where he makes some plays and you say, whoa, I see why they took him number 3. And some of the finishes he has at the rim, they're things of beauty. And some of the passes he makes are terrific. And then other times you look at him and say, okay, he just turned 20 years old, and there is still a lot of growth left in him for a guy who's played, what, 55-ish NBA games. Last year we saw a similar situation with Shaedon Sharpe. The difference was Shaedon Sharpe had played in basically every game and didn't miss the games that Scoot had. So for Scoot at this point to be, I don't necessarily think he's the focal point of what the team is doing, but he's the one who all the attention is on. So what do you want to see from Scoot in these final games?
Well, I think what we're seeing from Scoot is he's collecting experience, literally. I mean, he's playing a lot of minutes, as many minutes as possible, to get experience. And he's getting that experience. And some nights he's more polished than other nights. The big jump for Scoot's going to come in the offseason, because I think it's going to come as a result of his improvement of shooting the basketball. Kind of reminds me of when Magic Johnson came into the NBA. Not that I'm comparing Scoot to Magic, but they play the same position, and Magic wasn't a good shooter. I mean, he controlled the game with the pass. He did a lot of things. He's very entertaining, but teams didn't guard him on the perimeter because he wasn't a good shooter. And you can kind of say similar things about LeBron. I mean, there's a lot of guys that come in as primary ball handlers that get better shooting the basketball in year 2 and year 3. And I think Scoot fits into that category. I don't think Scoot's going to become a 50% shooter the rest of the season. He may have a game or two, but he's not going to, because that's the part of his game that he's figuring out what's a good shot, what's not a good shot. You know, there's just a lot of thinking that goes into running an NBA team and your offensive fluidity. And that's what I'm looking for Scoot to continue to work through.
You said a key word there, thinking, and you can see the wheels turning, and not just with Scoot, though. We've seen it. There have been a couple of games of late, especially we saw it in the Denver game, where you've got young players out there and they've got this idea on a possession that this is what's going to happen. And then they realize this is not what's going to happen. And then it's too late to make a decision because they haven't thought that far ahead with that next step. And then they turn the basketball over. It's not just Scoot. We've seen it with a number of players. So there's a difference between thinking and doing, and that comes with experience. And it's different for every player when that moment comes.
Well, it's different. And then the other team shows up.
Yeah, that helps.
And then they have defensive game plans and And there's enough of enough video on Scoot now where teams are, okay, we're going to, you know, push him left. We're going to, you know, bump him on his second dribble. Whatever that game plan scouting report is, it's sophisticated. And so you deal with that as well. And so watching Scoot play and our team play now is really interesting because Scoot pushes the ball and he changes gears. He slows down. He evaluates what's happening. And if he can get a step, he gets to the lane. But he doesn't force a shot. He doesn't take an off-balance shot. And sometimes he dribbles all the way back out and relooks at what's available. And so what our team, what the Blazers are doing now, which is interesting, is they're not running many plays. And I'm finding that to be interesting because you start the game in the first quarter and you got scripted plays. And what coaches do with most young teams is they give them two or three options off the same set. And they'll just say, play out of that set and just take one of the options that comes out of that set. So they don't have to think about set one, set two, set three, set four. Veteran teams will come out and script the first five plays and all five plays have three options. And veteran teams can pick your defense apart getting to the second option or the third option. Young guys can't do that. So the game has been simplified. So the team is playing faster, and they're playing with less decisions to be made.
Yeah. And they're mistakes. I mean, it happens. It happens with young guys. You're going to see it. They're 19, 20 years old. You have an interesting mix with this group that's been starting because you have a 27-year-old Duop Reith who has played around the world, right? And you've got a 19-year-old Ryan Rupert and kind of everything in between. You know, Tumani Kamara, obviously he's out tonight. But it's an interesting mix, and we talk so much about continuity. This group is starting to get some continuity together, which is also helpful.
And the reason they're getting it, Travis, is because everybody plays hard. And they play hard together. You seldom in a game where you see a play where a mistake is made for a lack of effort. I mean, teams rotate. They help the helper. Everybody pursues the 50-50 ball. Everybody runs the floor offensively and defensively. And that's performance. You know, and I think if you want to evaluate this team on a nightly basis, evaluate the energy, effort, and the performances. And you're seeing that every night. You know, and then the other team shows up and they perform better or they perform better down the stretch and the Blazers come up short. I mean, there's a pattern to these games.
Yeah. And most of the teams that the Blazers are playing have a lot to play for. Playoff positioning, home court, all kinds of things. That'll change a little bit with Washington and Charlotte on this trip. We haven't had a chance in this podcast yet to mention Delano Banton. And he's not starting. Doesn't seem to be bothering him. He's still playing, you know, 30, 35 minutes, sometimes more than that, coming off the bench. And he looks like a very poised veteran out there, even though he has played very little in the league. He's in his third year, played sparingly with Toronto the last couple of years, didn't play much at all with Boston this year. And I don't know that he's been written off or things like that before he got here. I wasn't around those teams, obviously. But he comes here and shows that he doesn't just belong in this league. I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but he deserves a role in this league.
Well, he's ready for his opportunity. You know, you described the other situations where he didn't have the opportunity to play. And I recall some of his comments when he came here about being around the winning culture of Boston and what he saw and learned around work ethic and how guys went about their business. You know, and the success equation is when opportunity meets preparation, then you have success. I think he prepared in those situations, and he came to Portland, and he got opportunity. And what we're seeing is a good, skilled NBA player. I mean, Delano Banton impacts the game every night. And what we're seeing now, because his opportunity is so large with the ball in his hand and the amount of minutes, that he's looking very seasoned.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, Joe Cronin has a lot of work to do to figure out where this team is going to go in the big picture, right? Because there are some young guys that play similar positions. He's had to make decisions like that in the past. That's way above my pay grade. And, you know, that's his job. But you look at Delano Banton, and he's a guy that has played himself into a position that's just hard to keep him off the floor. And I don't know what's going to happen, but he looks like a guy that you want to have around.
Well, he's a developed asset. I mean, and I don't mean to dehumanize him. He's just played extremely well, Travis. And let's just kind of categorize and qualify what he's done well is he handles the basketball. And when I say handles the basketball, he beats his defender repeatedly and gets in the lane and makes good decisions, whether they're scoring or passing. So he rotates the defenses as a primary ball handler. He scores, right? He shoots the ball well, but he scores. He's a catch-and-shoot guy, and he also scores well off the dribble because of his length and his handle. And those are really valuable skills to have.
We've heard for a few weeks that Shaedon Sharpe's going to come back, or maybe Malcolm Brogdon is going to come back, and DeAndre Ayton has been questionable and doubtful, and Matisse Thybulle and Jeremy Grant and all of these guys have not been fully ruled out. There's Anfernee Simons. You know, there's some guys that we know are not going to play again this season and some guys that may or may not. But with nine games left in the season, I don't know about you, I'm just looking at it like, okay, I'm not expecting those guys back until they're back. You got to play with what you got. And what you got has been a young, hungry group of guys that at the very least is competing.
Yeah, and I don't understand how those decisions are made. Obviously, if a guy's not healthy, he doesn't play. But you get inside of 10 games and you're evaluating young guys and you're trying to figure out a strategy for your offseason. You know, I think you keep looking at young guys, right? And Scoot, I think, is a big part of what the team wants to get the biggest evaluation of, to help script his offseason. And so I expect Scoot to play the lion's share of the minutes that he's available, whether it's health or if he stays out of foul trouble. We're going to say heavy dose of Scoot every night. And the other guys, you know, to your point, you play with what you have when they're available and you don't look for the cavalry to come.
Because they're not coming.
You know, I don't anticipate a large return of guys that are out. And I just don't know why you would bring back veteran guys with six games or five games while you're evaluating other guys. And then the veteran guys could, well, let's just look at it this way. Let me stay in a safe lane. The ramp up to return to play process itself takes a week to 10 days.
What's different about this team than some other teams that I've seen in the past, Michael, and I don't want to say that it's weird, but it's what's unusual is that you have a team that's in the position that they're in terms of wins and losses, and yet nobody's hanging their heads. They're not just playing out the string to get to the end of the season. And you've seen some situations with other teams where they're losing games. They just want to get out of there and get to their summer vacations and things like that. But that doesn't appear to be the case with this team. That's unusual.
No, this team is locked in to getting better individually, getting better collectively. And I think the staff has got these guys fully engaged in a process of improvement. And you see it every night. You see it in the before the game workouts. You see it in timeouts. You see that everybody's locked in. And it's interesting, Travis, to your point about from a win-loss standpoint, sometimes you can see when teams have checked out, right? And this is certainly not a team that has checked out. And there's two teams that I look at in a similar position this year. And I look at San Antonio and I look at the Blazers. And you look at their records, but teams aren't excited about playing them. I mean, because you know that both teams are going to play hard every night and they're not going to hand you a win.
No, they're not. And then I don't want to name names, but there are some teams you look at and say, okay, they have clearly stopped trying to win games. The Wizards, though, they're trying to win games right now. The Hornets are. The Wizards are pretty much locked into that top three, so winning and losing is completely irrelevant to their draft positioning. So they're seeing what they can do. As we get closer to the playoffs, I've had a number of people ask me about this in the last week or two. You know, what potential playoff matchup are you excited for? And I look at it up and down the both conferences. You've got some pretty even matchups. I think we're going to have a really good first round this year when usually it's pretty one-sided.
Yeah, I kind of care about the bottom and I care about the top and I don't pay attention to the middle. Like four or five games, I don't care about that. But the play-in, I'm a fan of the play-in, and particularly in the West. You know, you got Golden State and the Lakers. You got some interesting teams hovering around the play-in. And so I pay a lot of attention to that, and I think the Miami Heat from last year are the poster for what can happen in the play-in.
Yeah, and they're in that spot again right now. They're in the seventh seed in the East. But the 4-5 matchup today in the West would be the Clippers and the Pelicans. That would be a pretty darn good series.
That would be a really good series. And it would be one I wouldn't pay a lot of attention to.
Fair. Fair. All right, Michael, we've got a few days left on this trip. The season, I mean, the last month has just flown by. Are you ready for summer yet? Because I'm not.
I'm not. The golf clubs are still, you know, in the garage. I'm not. There's plenty of time for all of that. I'm looking at finishing this season and who's available and how this team plays because, you know, it's been a tough couple of years of the process of rebuilding the roster and the winning opportunity. And so I'm fully engaged in watching really every minute in every game. So there's no checking out in me at this point, Travis.
All right, same here. That'll wrap things up for us here on the Section 113 podcast. The Miami Heat tonight, 5 o'clock Pacific, Monday against the Orlando Magic. That is a 4 o'clock Pacific tip. And then the road trip keeps going and going and going. You can listen to every game on the Trailblazers Radio Network, of course, on our flagship station, 620 AM, Rip City Radio. He's Michael Holton. I'm Travis Demers. We'll see you next time on the Section 113 podcast.